Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
This episode is brought to you by Noom. Forget one-size-fits-all diets. With Noom, you get a personalized weight loss plan that's tailored to your lifestyle. No food is off limits. Enjoy your favorites while discovering healthier habits. Noom's users love the flexible approach, blending psychology and biology to help you lose weight in a way that's sustainable for you. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 860. This episode brought to you by Tor Books, the proud publisher of best-selling author John Scalzi. Praised by Joe Hill as the most entertaining, accessible writer working in San Francisco today, Scalzi has been delighting and surprising readers for over a decade. He carries on that tradition with the all-new space opera adventure, The Collapsing Empire. Since the debut of Old Man's War, Scalzi has brought us compelling characters, fascinating aliens, new worlds to explore. In the breakout success Red Shirts, he out-galaxy quested Galaxy Quest with a tongue-in-cheek homage to TV science fiction classics like Star Trek. So now, join John in a universe on the brink of interstellar war in the collapsing empire, and delight in the fascinating worlds and compelling characters Scalzi fans have come to love. The Collapsing Empire is now available wherever books are sold. And you know who's available wherever podcasts are available is Matt Myra.
Hi, Chris.
Matt, what? Jesus Christ, you scared the shit out of me.
Well, you know, I figured I would. I at the end of the Incredible Hulk TV show, you know, walks out of town sad.
Dun, 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 dun.
Exactly. That's how I move from podcast to podcast.
The Hulk is sad. The Hulk is crying. The Hulk is sad.
I finish up a podcast. I put my bag on my back and I head out
to
another podcast.
You move on to the next one. Yeah, still.
Now here I am at the Nerdist.
You're still. And also coincidentally still trying to find the cure for the monster that dwells within you.
This is where I was first bombarded with gamma radiation.
But the studio, we weren't here.
Well, technically, it was actually Todd Glass's house, but...
Gotcha.
You know...
Oh, my God, that's right. Comedy and everything else.
I have been podcasting for a very long time, Chris.
Holy shit, Matt.
Chris Hardwick.
What a pioneer you are. Katie
Levine.
How are
you not sick of it?
How am I not sick of it?
How are you not sick of it is
how
the question,
you?
Katie. So anyway,
I'm joking.
You know what makes it all better though? The Nerdist Community Cork
Board. It does. I love the Nerdist Community Cork Board because I can like plug just like really fun things. Like this guy, Aaron Stommel, he wrote in, he was inspired by you always saying create a thing. So he created Veiled Books, and it's basically like a blind date with a book. None of the authors and titles are visible through each book.
Oh, that's
book.
Interesting.
Yeah, they just have clues on what it's about. Shipping's free. And if you don't like it, they offer an exchange. And it just sounds really cool. Like you can look them at Veiled Books on Twitter or veiledbooks.com. And then also I want to plug our Bachelor-themed podcast, Will You Accept This Rose, is doing our first live show ever at Zany's Nashville.
Zany's Nashville is a great club.
I got ready for my comedy special there. It's a fucking phenomenal
I hear good
club.
Things.
And very historic in comedy.
It's May 7th, and there's a lot of people from the Bachelor Nation that live in Nashville. Matt, you will know some of these people. Mm-hmm. Carly and Evan will be there.
Sure.
James Taylor, Luke Powell.
Oh, my God.
Danielle from the most recent season.
Whoa.
Wells Adams.
Are
if you
going?
Watch the shows,
are you going
to
go?
I'm trying to. If you,
you
watch
go.
The shows, you know who these people are.
That's
so
very
May
exciting.
7th at Zany's. You can go to nashville.zany's.
Excellent.
I only take umbrage with the fact that you call it a bachelor themed podcast. It's a bachelor podcast.
You know what else we should? You know what else we should promote?
How am I supposed to call it? How am I supposed to say it? I don't know.
It sounds like it's themed for bachelors.
Yeah,
like where to go,
guys. Okay. Let me tell you about what
the
to do.
Bachelor podcast.
When you want to clean your taint. But say you're in an airport bathroom.
You want to clean it up before you go in. Then you want to go to the Spearmint Rhino. You're going to go to one of the back door. There's a guy there.
I don't go
Chewy.
Spearmint. I go to Deja Vu.
Oh, gotcha. Matt Myra, since we're doing News Community Corporate, maybe you should plug Dory's book.
I would love to plug Dory's book. Thank you, Christopher Hardwick. Startup, a novel by Dory Shafrir, available for pre-order on Amazon. Right now, it's the number one bestseller in number one new release for the on Amazon for fiction, humor.
And we're going to get Dory on the podcast.
Dory will be on the podcast talking about the said book. But if you guys are kind enough to pre-order it, comes out April 25th, you could pre-order it. We're trying to get her above a certain threshold of books, and if she gets to that threshold, you will all be graced with a bonus episode of Matt and Dory's Excellent Adventure.
This episode is Dax Shepard returning to the podcast, who Dax I've known for a really long time.
Like Chips.
A couple decades, in fact. And I'm real proud of Dax. He made it. Dax, I like that guy.
He's a funny dude.
He's funny as shit. We did Groundlings. I mean, I shouldn't say I did Groundlings because I was not in the Groundlings company, but I took classes at the Groundlings. I've known him forever. And he's just one of those guys that's fun to riff with. You know, it's like whatever you throw out, he's gonna catch it and throw it back.
He's a very likable.
He's lovable,
very likable human being.
Chips is in theaters Friday, March 24th, and so that's this episode. He's returning. I think he was on like a year or two ago. I don't even remember time anymore. The fact that we've been on for 7 years still melts my brain. We were approaching a decade of podcasting, and it still feels like this weird new thing we're doing.
We're gonna get there.
I feel like we're going to make
it. We're going to drag Jonah across the finish line.
Where it's just his nails have ripped back from his fingers from the concrete, just peeling. They've just peeled back. To use a Stephen King quote, I think it was Stephen King, like wet decals.
Yeah.
His fingernails came up. This episode also brought to you by Casper. Casper mattresses, obsessively engineered at a shockingly fair price. And it's they have supportive memory foam. And
that's two technologies. That's two sleep technologies in one, Chris.
What?
Yeah, that's how good Casper is. They've managed to fit it all into a tiny box,
too. So you're saying just the right sink and just the right bounce.
That's exactly what I'm saying, Chris. It's a Casper mattress. I've been using Casper mattresses since they first sponsored Feeb.
Many years ago. Four eyes and a beard.
Yep. Podcast that I don't do anymore.
When's the next new Feeb episode coming?
Scott's in Paris right now.
Oh, sure.
So maybe actually next week.
You could, yeah. Yeah, that'd be great on your vacation. Try to convince your wife to let you go do a fucking podcast.
My wife, who I do a podcast with every week, I think she'd understand.
Okay, good point. Try Casper for 100 nights risk-free in your own home. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up. They'll refund you everything because they understand the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering you're going to spend a third of your life on
90
it.
90 fucking days they give you, Chris.
It's 100.
That's more. That's 10 more days than I just said.
Free shipping and returns to U.S. and Canada with over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars out of 5. It is quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/Nerdist.
Casper. Order a Casper. Use the promo code Nerdist.
Thanks, Matt Myra. Terms and conditions apply. Now here's the Nerdist Podcast number 860 with Dax Shepard.
Wee.
Katie, roll the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I
love my mom, okay? I'm not afraid.
I don't care
who knows it.
Okay, I was just...
Thank you very much. Yeah, I was just realizing...
You really are a super fan. I didn't even know you had just gotten married.
Wow. In August.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I just had to do a press junket for 4 hours. And when I keep saying, "Oh, we just got married," and I realize, "Oh, it was August." Like it's almost a like we're. It's
yeah, getting, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You must know that yeah. Before you know it, it's like.
Well, and we don't know when we got married, which is extra tricky because we were. I remember when we got engaged, but we had waited so long for DOMA to get struck down that when we got married, it was just whatever the day after DOMA was. We already had a kid.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was very insignificant to both of us.
Because you were already – it was already happening.
Yeah. We were married. We had a child and we were about to have another one.
You have
one,
a bell tattoo on your finger?
Yeah. Because I can't do that. I have such a paranoia about a ring being stuck on my finger. Does that – enter your head at all?
Well, the my Lydia warned me. She just knows about these weird things. She was like, "Don't get tungsten or nickel or there's some metal that if you get it stuck on your finger, they have to take your finger off. It gets cut off." This actually they
well, titanium. A lot of guys have titanium rings, and those
this is titanium.
Like, that is
yeah.
That's very hard to cut through.
Not with adamantium claws. If you're Wolverine, you could just cut it right off.
True, true. But yeah, I was like, okay, I'm going to have to get a ring.
Yes.
And I just couldn't do it. And then I was like, all right, well, here's another solution.
Does she have a ring or did you?
She has a ring. Yeah, oh, okay. She has a ring she loves.
You didn't talk her out of it. So what if instead of...
Let's flip this thing.
Could you tattoo a shepherd on your finger?
So when I got her the ring, that was the big move for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's to me when we got married, you know, is when I go there and they're like, I'm like, how much is it? And I'm like, holy smokes. Okay. And then I hand them the American Express. And when I handed it to the dude, the jeweler, I was like, hold on a second. I'm getting a very visceral memory right now. Like, this feels very familiar, although I've never bought an engagement ring. And I was like, oh my God, I know exactly what this is. It's when you get a tattoo, they put a transfer on you first.
Okay.
And it's just an outline of the tattoo. And then you look at it in the mirror and then you go, okay, let's do it. And that moment gives you this very distinct feeling, like making a permanent decision.
You've made the decision.
There's so
to cross
few
over.
Decisions in your life that literally are permanent.
Right.
And when I handed him that credit card, I was like, "Oh shit, here we go. This is for real. This is permanent."
And wait, do you have? Is it? Are you covered in? Are you all tattooed?
I have four. Do I have four? I have four tattoos.
I haven't done it yet.
I have a very big one here, though. Like when they put that on, I was like, "Okay." That's a commitment.
Yeah, I don't know. I just haven't. I keep.
You've never gotten one.
Mm-mm.
You know, the misnomer about them is that you think you're going, or the fear is you're going to go, oh my God, I'm stuck with this thing for life. But you literally don't see them after a year. Like,
but that's still like a year white, of going, it's white, I'm stuck with them for the rest of my life.
No, you'll love it, even if it's terrible.
Yeah.
It's fun.
I don't know. I keep.
Let's get yanked up.
I have.
let's
do it right now. Yeah. We're going to travel. We're going to take this podcast to. How long have you been married?
25 years.
Nice. Nicely done.
Fourth is the charm, they say. Isn't that the same?
Like Erica Kane.
Yeah. Hey. Well, my mom loved Erica Kane. My mom was a big, you know, when I was a kid, it was All My Children, right? Yep. All My Children. Sujan Lucci. Wins her Emmy.
You know, the whole notion of like fame and celebrity is very bizarre and foreign still, even to me, years into doing this. So when my mom is a super fan of someone I've known for like 20 years, it still feels very funny to me. I'm like, what do you mean you're like, you think Chris is awesome?
This guy?
He's just Chris.
This guy?
Yeah.
This guy?
Like if your mom was a super fan of me, wouldn't you just – that would be weird.
She probably is.
Let's call her.
Let's call her right
Let's
now.
Let's get her on the phone.
I think our moms would probably dig each other.
Yeah. Well, they have nearly identical kids.
That's true.
Yeah.
We're very, very similar.
That's right.
And but I feel like I'm older than you are.
I don't think so. How old are you? I'm 42.
45.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were five when Chips
front
came
shotgun.
Out.
Shotgun. Front seat.
Yeah. But yeah. I got bigger than my brother at 12, and that could have happened to us as
Did
well.
Did you beat him up?
Eventually, yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I think that's important.
Oh, my God. It's like probably the most quintessential memory I have. If I had to like lose the birth of my children and keep that one of beating my brother up, I might do it. Because he had been beating me up for 13 years. Mm-hmm. It was actually 13 because I was in eighth grade. And he was 5 years older than me. And yeah, it was just the most exhilarating feeling ever. The second he left my room, I called my dad. It was like 7 a.m. I called him and I screamed like, I just kicked David's ass. He's like, all right.
How did it go down? How did it go down? And what was the ass kicking?
It couldn't have been. Do you remember the fight scene in History of Violence, the nude bathhouse?
Yes.
Yeah. It was not unlike that because I was getting ready in the morning, and I was on the basketball team, and we were playing our crosstown rival. It was a big morning. Mm-hmm. I was in, which I never wore at that age, I was in a shirt and tie and like pleated dress pants. I was playing music really loud. My mom was out of town. He was watching the house. He came upstairs in a towel.
Okay.
He was
like Chet.
He was 18. Yes, just like Chet. He's like, turn it down. My girlfriend's sleeping. And I immediately was like, you don't live here anymore. And it just was instant. We were fighting, and his towel came off very shortly into the scuffle.
Sure.
and it was a wrestling match that ended up on my waterbed, and I had him pinned in the corner of the waterbed, and I had my hand on his neck, and I cocked back, and I looked at him. I'm like, I'll break your fucking nose. I'll break your nose. He's like, I quit. And I was like, yes. And then I got off of him, and he had to walk naked to where his towel fell off, grab it, pick it up, put it back on. And as he was walking down the hall, he goes, you know who won. But we both knew who won, and it wasn't him.
Yeah, I feel like you needed to tell a secret girlfriend that he got his ass kicked by a 13-year-old.
Yeah. But we were the same size, in his defense.
Yeah.
And it was my big basketball day. Probably my testosterone was peaking that morning.
And you did.
In anticipation. You know, I think
I think you exercised an enormous amount of compassion and restraint.
I did.
Following through on the punch.
I really could have. I could have hurt him. I had him in a very vulnerable position.
I feel like he would have hit you.
No, he was so pinned. We were on a waterbed. First of all, what a kinky fight that ends
very
up
romantic.
On a waterbed. Yeah,
very yes, romantic.
And one guy's naked. It's actually more out there than the History of Violence fight, if I think about it.
Yeah, the Viggo, he wasn't fighting his brother.
No, on a waterbed.
Yeah. Yes. It was just like mafia guys.
By the way, Kristen makes fun of me at least once a month about the fact that I had a waterbed all through junior high.
I had one.
All
too.
Boys wanted a waterbed, right?
It sounded better than it was.
Oh, yeah. I still probably have back problems from that.
You can't ever get the.
Well, what I found is that if you underfilled it, it got more comfortable. It was when it was really inflated and you were sleeping like on top of a beach ball.
Yeah.
Like it'd get convex. But I found that with very minimal water, it was quite comfortable. But then, and my mom's here to confirm this, I was getting these mystery hives where I would wake up in the morning, I'd get in the shower, and then I would have a hive on my thigh, like my upper thigh, the size of a like smart water bottle.
Okay.
A huge, huge blister hive, right? And this happened to me 3 times. We went to the doctor. They had no idea what it was. One morning I woke up. I woke up because my leg was burning. I was sleeping on my side and it was underinflated, and I was sleeping directly on the heating pad from the water bed heater. And those 3 previous hives were just big burn blisters.
Hashtag 80s problems. that was like there was
hashtag 80s
like
problems.
There was no greater symbol of like the swinger than the waterbed from the 70s and 80s, which. I guess it sort of seems like we shall sleep on a bed. I have mastered control of the element of water to the extent that we will sleep on it.
You're right. There's something medieval about like it's fulfilling a medieval fantasy.
And when someday
like if I had fire burning in the corner and
we're
sleeping on water
and a water
and then
bed.
There's a fan blowing wind mm-hmm. and you've just got it all.
You've mastered all of it.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe you know, just for fun, surprise the wife and bring – and when she comes home, you have a waterbed all of a sudden and just see
it. I think my wife would like it more than she thinks she'd like it simply because of the heat factor.
Sure.
That is the genius of the waterbed is
right.
You can get that sucker up to about 95 degrees and sleep without any sheets on in the wintertime in Michigan.
Do they still – I feel like I don't really hear much about waterbeds.
I know, but when's the – I agree with you, but then I would also propose, when's the last time you looked at the back of a TV guide? Because that's generally where you saw those ads, right?
I don't like to take them out of the Mylar. I put them in the Mylar, and then I save them.
Well,
so I don't.
I made an observation.
You know, it hurts the value when
yes.
you open the TV guides.
I made an observation about you before you got here, which is I bet you love every time you get a new office because there's just more room to put all your crap in.
You're 100% right.
Yeah.
And
you probably couldn't have too many offices.
No. Yeah. And the luxury problem of my life right now is that nice people send me more things.
Uh-huh.
And I feel bad. I don't want to get rid of it because they took the time to send it. So I just have a lot of stuff.
You're
at the
proper codependent like myself. Yeah. You'd rather
That's
make yourself
exactly right.
miserable under an
to
avalanche of tchotchkes
yes, yes.
and hurt someone's feelings.
I don't
feelings.
Want anyone feeling to, and they would never find out.
Right.
But I would know.
Yes,
and if
yes,
I run
yes.
into them at some point and they go, "Hey, how's that Jabba the Hutt watercolor painting I painted on a rock."
Yeah.
I would go, I couldn't lie to them if I was like, I didn't save it. I'm sorry.
But you are now, maybe it's a blessing because you're now forced to have 7 or 8 offices. Mm-hmm. You have to build like a global brand now.
I have to
house
them.
All your shit.
That's what this all
but
is.
But it also is like flubber because the more offices and global branding you do, the more crap you're going to get sent.
That's exactly right. It's just a self-driving engine.
It is.
That keeps
it's
eating
gaining
its own
velocity.
Tail. It's gaining
too.
Velocity and mass and strength. It will someday become sentient and self-aware and then.
Yeah.
And
or it'll reach critical mass and you'll explode.
That's also possible too. Yeah.
You'll be unwrapping some coffee mug made by.
I need this thing. You know, I really have to stop thinking that I need anything because I've become a rabid animation cell collector.
Okay.
And there's a couple of dealers who know that if they send me something, I'm probably going to buy it.
Yep.
And every time I go, this is the last time.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, boy, this is a really great scene from Disney's Robin Hood.
Right.
And I probably need it.
Yeah.
So that someone else doesn't treat it
my
poorly.
Conclusion on this whole, I'm going to put an umbrella over all this nostalgia stuff.
I don't think there's room for an umbrella in here.
Okay. There is not.
Okay.
Unless someone sent you one, you'd find a way. But
I probably have a couple.
I saw a photo on Twitter of like the old Nintendo game console and several of the games that I happened to actually love as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this moment where I was like, I'm going to go right now. I'm going to buy all that stuff on eBay. I'm going to play Contra, you know, whatever I'm going to do. And then I realized I don't miss that thing. I very much miss the feeling I had using that thing in that period
sure.
of time. Like
sure.
what I'm actually nostalgic for is the feeling and not the object. And
yes.
I kind of had to break my own cycle of that. Like, mind you, I'm talking to you in Air Jordan 4s that I bought last week because I couldn't afford them in junior high.
Yes. Well, that's
– So as much as I'm telling you I've licked this thing, I am wearing the most obnoxiously gaudy shoes because the eighth grader in me needed them.
You need those shoes to jump head first
yeah,
into –
to get Randy Hammond's phone number is what I really need him for.
It really is about the experience. It's always about the experience and the acquisition and the hunting process, the hunting and the gathering. And then when you actually have the thing, it's like, oh, yeah, I got that thing. But
still,
now there's this new other thing that I need.
That'll be the thing that makes me my childhood healed.
Maybe the hole in my soul is that shaped. Nope.
Yes.
I'll try again.
The producer of Chips, who's one of my best friends, Andrew Panay, I walked in his garage last year and we're like just walking through his garage to get into his kitchen and I see as if it was like had its own light source, there was this beautiful chrome GT BMX bike.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, and he is not into biking. I go, oh my God, what is this bike all about? And he goes, buddy, I wanted that bike so bad when I was in junior high. And like, I got it. And we stared at this bike as if it were like a brand new Ferrari.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I was like, I got to get one of those.
Just so you can have it.
GT BMX bikes. And then we were like, oh my God, that's what all this is about. The nice car, the nice everything. It's all about wanting that GT BMX bike when you're a kid. And
well,
it just never goes away.
I have said many times on the podcast, and it seems to continually ring true, that you are always you always see yourself as a version of yourself around the time you were hitting puberty.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe in the 13, 12 to 14.
Yeah.
You always kind of see yourself at that age. I feel like most of the things you do are to try to make up for that kid
right.
or do things. And this all tracks. It all absolutely tracks. You constantly.
And I'm inclined to get past that. But then I also ask myself, well, then what's left? Like, do you actually want to heal that and become so self-actualized? Then what? I guess you sit in a lawn chair.
Boring.
Yeah.
Boring.
Why would I work?
Yeah. I don't know. Why would you do anything?
Right.
If there wasn't still a little BMX bike out there somewhere to chase
calling
after.
Calling my name.
Yeah.
And some Air Jordans and a waterbed probably.
Yeah, you have to help create the issues for your – you have to give your kids the gift of your issues for them to deal with in 20 or 30 years.
Yes. You don't have kids.
Not yet.
No. But you're going to have
we
them,
will.
Right? Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Or we're going to give it – we're going to give it the old
– College try.
College try.
Yeah. You'd probably wear a condom if you're giving it the college try.
Well, you would hope that you would.
Yeah.
You would aim.
You would have aimed to, and then you would have not.
The old college tries. Oh shit! I think it broke. So there's that.
Yeah,
so that might work.
And walking home from someone's house, going, "Oh, I'm an idiot. I brought a condom.
Why?
Why didn't I just put it?
I mean, I had one in my wallet for like 6 years.
Have you met
years.
My mom, by the way?
Yeah, nice to see you again.
Okay, great.
You know, I can. my mom is also. quite
privy to a lot of stuff.
Quite liberal with the boundaries in terms of,
yeah.
You know, my mom has been to see my stand-up before. I have advised her not to.
Right.
She's like, I don't care. It's fine.
Yeah. And, I have the same mom.
Told embarrassing, you know, I've told very embarrassing stories with her on stage and just kind of been like, welp.
There it is.
She knows what she, this is her fault for coming here. I told her what was going to happen.
Yeah. And the lie you tell yourself when you have kids is that they won't have, like, I'm doing such a great job that I won't someday see my daughter doing stand-up and hear a bunch of crazy stuff. But it's obviously a huge lie. She's
yeah.
going to have a whole chest of stories that, you know.
Yeah.
Like I, to me, the defining moment was Kristen had done a lot of work with Bill Clinton in some capacity. I don't know what it was. I can only question his motives. Point is, she did a lot, maybe with the Clinton.
I'm a big fan of Veronica Mars. What can I say?
Yeah.
That's,
I'm a marshmallow. Okay. All right, Bill.
Donated to the Kickstarter. Huh? That's worth a hangout.
So she had done enough work with the Clinton Foundation that when our firstborn arrived, we got a letter in the mail that was from Bill Clinton welcoming our daughter to the world. And Kristen framed that, and it's in our house. And I said, you know, at some point Lincoln will be in therapy holding that thing. Like, well, what do they expect? They have this – the president welcomed me to this world. Like, you know, I would have had to have cured cancer for them to be proud of me. Like, somehow that –
and also
that,
named after another president.
Yeah, but she's named after a car. But yes, at that point she'll probably
But the car
say,
was named after a president.
Or Lincoln, Nebraska. I don't know.
Which was named
I wasn't so close to Henry Ford, which was named after a president. Again, you want to keep getting back to president. He was a great man.
Going.
Fine. I concede the fact that he was a great, great man.
I mean, he did some stuff.
We lost him prematurely.
Okay, he did some stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, he'd still be alive today. And I don't think anyone could argue that. Would still be alive today.
I remember in a biology class in college learning that our Lincoln had this disorder. Have you heard about this? That they now know he definitely had this disease where his aorta would have blown up soon after that had he not been shot.
Oh.
He has all the physical
You're
hallmarks.
Welcome, Lincoln.
Yeah, so we may have saved him.
We may. I think John Wilkes Booth.
Yeah, I'm
John Wilkes Booth. John Wilkes Booth was a doctor from the future.
He was a euthanizer from the
Six
future.
Six Emperor Tyrannus, which he shot him when she met, was death. Was actually targeted at the aorta.
Yes.
Yes, this heart of a, this tyrant of a heart, that I'm going to take care of this now. It was.
Can I sidetrack for 1 second?
I wish you would.
The term break a leg.
Mm-hmm.
What do you interpret that? What do you think the genesis of that term is, break a leg?
It sounds like
I've heard two really compelling explanations.
It sounds like some dumb shit vaudeville thing. I don't know.
Okay, so the first thing I ever heard was they say break a leg because after Wilkes Booth shot Lincoln, he jumped off the balcony onto the stage, he broke his leg, and then he exited, and it was the greatest exit in the history of theater. That's one break a leg. The other is...
I don't know if I buy that one.
I love that one. That's my
it's preferred
one.
It's a good one, though.
The other one is the rope that pulls the curtain up and down is called the leg. And that if you did such a great performance that they have to do so many bows and curtain
oh.
calls, that thing will be coming up up and down so often that you would break
I
a leg.
I feel like this makes more sense.
What a pussy.
I like
I
this.
Can't believe you're not going to go with the John
well,
Wilkes
I mean,
booth.
You know...
How could you?
I'm just afraid, okay? I'm sorry. I'm such a pussy
fine,
about it.
Fine.
It's the curtain one. I think it's the curtain one.
You don't like that one, though.
I'm not saying I don't like it. It's
so exciting.
It's
he jumped off a balcony and
lore.
He knew this.
He just shot the president.
Yes.
So what
whatever
with that, performances.
That's superfluous information. If this were like
you're honestly saying that anyone else at the Ford Theater watched the president get shot and Booth jumps on the stage and they go. I mean, he shot the president, but God, what an amazing...
What an exit.
I mean, what an exit.
What an exit.
I didn't... I just thought we were going to see...
Shall everyone break a leg in the future?
Our American Cousin was a boring play, but that exit, you got to give it to him.
It saved it.
You got to give it to him.
It saved a boring
yeah.
play.
Yeah. P.S., I think the president's aorta...
By the way, he's not looking good.
He's
the
not,
president.
He's got some
him.
Sort of a heart thing that's beyond our scientific understanding at this point in time. So whatever happened, I'm sure, is going to be fine.
But apparently he had something. And when I read it, I thought, I have the same body type as him. I convinced myself for about a month my aorta was going to blow
up. Of course,
up.
Yes, because you had this sort of empathetic hypochondria.
Yeah, or narcissistic.
Sympathetic.
sympathetic
so funny.
Hypochondria.
Lincoln gets shot. Why does everything happen to me?
Yeah. Well, oh, great. I'm going to get shot.
Oh, good. I'm going to have an... Someone's going to shoot me because I have an aorta.
Yeah.
Problem.
Well, I already have the same disease as him, so why rule out getting shot?
I mean, seriously, we're both tall.
This is why I tell Chris and I don't want to go see live theater.
It's all, the evidence is all there.
Yeah. Just it's look, everyone, there. Open your eyes.
Sure, Booth is going to get all the attention for break a leg.
Right.
For shooting the president. It's not called, you know.
They don't say. Explode your head.
They don't say.
Good luck tonight. Explode your head.
Explode your head. Why do they say that? Well, one theory is that the curtain head is like if they open it in the right way. The other theory is that when John Wilkes Booth blew Lincoln's head off, everyone's like, what an amazing entrance.
Most dramatic entrance ever. Of all time.
Explode your head.
Hey, guys. Explode your heads tonight. Maybe we can get that to take off.
Tragedy plus time, right? Time? Yeah. There's enough time. Distance? There's enough distance.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we could talk
Hundreds
about it.
Hundreds of years.
Again, he'd still be alive. But
he would have a real tore up aorta. It would be in bad
shape.
He'd probably have a mechanical pig's heart.
Like Craigslist aorta at this point, just broken down.
Do you have any hypochondria?
Oh, yeah, tons.
You do.
Sure.
And do you think it's a product? Let me launch a theory on you.
Here we go.
Okay, buckle up. So apparently, Elon Musk. Is a big proponent. I don't know if he believes 100%, but he is.
Of not eye contact.
Is that one of his things?
I don't know.
You can only assume because he's so smart. But apparently he believes a bit that he's living in a matrix.
Yes, we're running in a simulation.
Right. And so when that was someone explained that to me, I thought to myself, yeah, that sounds about right. And then I had a second thought, which is, of course it sounds right to me or Elon Musk or you, someone who's had an unfair share of good luck in their life.
Mm-hmm.
It starts feeling suspicious. I doubt there's a coal miner right now going, this is a fucking matrix. I know it. I know this is a matrix.
I'm stuck in this coal mine for like a week.
Yeah. This is a matrix. Don't you think it's a lofty product?
I'm starting
of
to see
like
all the ones and zeros.
Too much good fortune that you'd start questioning, this can't be real.
I also feel like the opposite can be true, is that if you feel like you have, because I think people's brains, you know, the world is constantly being interpreted, especially now, because the matrix that we're in now is the confirmation bias matrix.
Oh, explain that to me.
Well, it's essentially that people are.
I brought this up to the right guy, by the way.
Hey, no.
I thought you were going to go, oh, he does believe that?
No, I.
Oh, you got. All right. So
no, I'll talk about it for reals.
Okay. So
I am more serious than a Lincoln aorta.
Okay. What are we in now? The confirmation.
Confirmation bias matrix, which is basically. The reality is completely subjective based on whatever people want to believe it is. So in other words, because of the internet, we have the ability to surround ourselves with information that just confirms the things we already believe.
Oh, the bubble we live in.
And whether or not that's true, and the more evidence that you can present someone and go, well, this is – I know you believe this, but here's actually the evidence. Even the less likely they are to believe because they're, you know, clinging so tightly to
hence politics. It just further
not just
entrenches
politics, any
you.
Of
no,
it.
I'm just saying anytime you hold a belief and you hear an opposing one, it often has the result of just further entrenching you in the first belief.
Right. And so it's – and we're able to build those cocoons quite easily
via
now.
The internet.
Yeah. So I think there
so
is –
So the question is who's the eye in the sky? Who's controlling the matrix? Or do you think this is a self-made matrix?
I think it's controlled.
Like an accidental?
I think there's a not aware throbbing being, because it's not like an Orwellian thing. I think other people are the big brother now. Other people are agents in the matrix.
Yeah.
And it's this kind of like weird mass of social media that is essentially.
But are we suspended in a pod at some realm
being used as batteries?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you go that far with it.
Well, I just think if you're going to go, you know,
you
like,
might as well,
really
yeah,
just
soup
take
to
it,
nuts.
Go all the way to the human dessert, batteries powering the
get
robots.
The dram, the whatever the Sambuca dessert aperitif is.
Were you going to say Drambuie?
Yeah, is that what it is?
I think.
Yeah, Drambuie.
Is that a thing?
I think it is.
It sounds like an old
Sambuca.
Sounds like something you would drink naked on a waterbed.
Yeah, yeah, if you were lucky enough.
And the drink is flaming.
And at that point, you go, fuck yeah, I'm in a Matrix.
I'm in a fucking Matrix.
Yeah, this is way too good to be
true.
Hey,
it feels like I just burned my cock on this waterbed, but it's just a Matrix cock. It's not even a real one.
Everything's fine. I'm still generating.
Sorry. I'm very sorry about that.
I'm still generating 1,300 BTUs somewhere. In a pod.
Maybe my cock burned the bed. How about that? Do you ever think about that bed?
Do you think, though, there's any...
I'm glad your mom laughed at that.
Do you think, though, that I'm on to something that... It is a little telling of your lot in life that you're in a perfect
reality. No, what I was
going to
say is I feel like... Where I was, I remember where I was going with that now is that people kind of write their own story. They fill in the blanks, you know, where people, if they most of the time don't have enough information, they kind of add the narrative that fits whatever baggage they have.
Right.
And so I can see a situation where someone in a very poor, through a very poor stroke of luck would say, well, this is all preordained.
Because their narrative is they're a victim.
Their narrative is they're a victim and that this is all part of, you know, a matrix where they are the victim of this matrix and it's not... You know, in any case, it's people not taking responsibility.
But it's probably, though, just coming full circle back to the fact that people find it far too unpleasant to think there's no rhyme or reason. So for you, you're probably an atheist. Yet now, so now you're clutching onto this notion of a matrix because really it just comes back to like. It's too depressing to imagine that.
Well,
there's no rhyme or reason.
I'm clutching onto the robot that's powering my body battery, if that's what you mean.
You son of a bitch. What, You're an android?
Well, listen. All I'm saying
what's
is...
What's crazy is if I'm in a Matrix
Anderson.
And you do so much work just to seem legit when I come see you once a year.
Yeah.
Like, you have to do... That robot has to do so much
it's
work
not easy.
To
it's
be
a very
convincing
well,
to me.
It's a very well-planned Matrix.
All right. So when I leave here, you disappear?
I disappear. Yeah, I go. Oh, and then I appear somewhere else.
So there's
else.
Just a bubble of reality around
all around
me.
You. Okay. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now you're getting
now
it.
Now I'm finding
yeah,
my
now
way.
You're getting it. Okay. But yeah, I think this all spawned from you asking me if I had hypochondria. And of course, the second you see – I used to not be able to watch House.
Okay.
Because every week it was like, well, the only thing I'm sure of is that I don't have lupus because it's never lupus on that show. But everything
right.
else I probably have.
Yeah, your open season.
Oh, I probably have the thing where the guy got poisoned from using too much deodorant.
But again, do you feel like this is a product? Has this increased as your life has gotten better?
Yeah, I feel like it's more of a struggle. Yes, yes.
I've been on this biography tear for the last year. I've like for whatever reason I've become obsessed with all the like early tycoons, right? So I don't know if you read Titan. That's probably the best one of all of them, the John D. Rockefeller biography. But all these guys have the same trajectory. They get super rich, and like the day they get rich and acknowledge they're rich, they become obsessed about living forever, right? It's almost like it's unavoidable. If you conquer the things that are supposed to be what you're supposed to conquer in life, right, like security and all that, then your mind immediately switches to like, okay, now I want to make this last forever.
Yeah, then you want to
preserve this great thing you've created for yourself.
A therapist once told me that it's not about the keeping. It's about the having, not the keeping.
Right.
So you don't necessarily break that down for me.
Well,
I mean, you can enjoy having something knowing that it's impermanent.
Oh, right.
And that
yeah.
you don't have to keep stuff forever to have it.
Well,
for
you
it to
in
have
particular
value.
Who collects stuff. That
right,
seems
right,
very
exactly.
poignant that he brought him up.
No, no, no. Don't worry about any of this.
Seems like this therapist has really gotten through to you.
I know what it seems like. I know what it looks like.
I'm actually like feel a little in danger.
Dex, this is a script. It's a fucking program.
Okay,
none of this is real. This
okay.
is all generated. All
right. Okay,
will disappear.
That can't
the second
fall
you're
on
gone.
Me. Okay.
The second you're gone. That's an interesting question. I should ask. I should
because I, in my own life, I used to fly back to Detroit, and I had been 10 years of auditioning, never booking anything. I still was an alcoholic, and when heavy turbulence would hit, I would actually think, oh, fuck it. Let's do it. Let's go down.
Mm-hmm.
My mom can say I was going to be successful or I was something good.
But now that you have it, now you're extra paranoid.
Now I care. Now I have like two kids I love. My life is pretty fucking great. And when there's turbulence, I'm like, no. I just got some of this figured out. I don't want to lose it. And well, I think I'm also more whatever the verb version of that is. I'm a hypochondriac more now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more, well, say it. You're smarter than me.
You're more of a hypochondriac. Hypochondrial?
Yeah, I'm more hypochondrial.
I'm a hypochondriacer.
Yeah, I'm more hypochondriacer.
upper hypochondriac.
But these are not things I worried about when I was miserable.
No, but those are all control issues. Those are all control issues, though.
Uh-huh.
Those are all control issues, you know? And as someone who also was a recovering alcoholic, it's all those are all control issues.
Right. And did you have tics as a kid?
You mean like nervous tics?
Well, I'll just tell you mine and you can see if they ring a sure. bell. First of all, have you ever read David Sedaris Naked?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The first chapter is called Plague of Ticks. And I read that and I was like, oh my goodness, this was my childhood. So I had to do everything twice. I had all these bizarre rituals. I could only take a shit if I was bare naked. I had to.
Is this true?
Yeah.
Oh, I had to be bare naked to shit, too.
Oh, you did? Yeah. And not only did I have to be bare naked,
and only
naked,
in front of old men. Is that weird?
I squatted. Well, I hope to return to that.
Okay, good.
That was nice. Then you jump right in the shower.
There's yeah, yeah, and then it's fine.
But I had to take the toilet paper, and I had to string it out through the bathroom, open the door, touch the hallway wall, but I had to do that twice. So then I had, like, several hundred yards of toilet paper every time I went. But it never ended. I had to click my foot twice. You know, I had all these yeah. things. Okay. Did you have any of that stuff?
I don't feel like I had that. I probably had my own little obsessions.
Right. Did you make any weird noises in your throat or anything?
Are you just trying to see
if you're okay? No, these are things I had. No. My ex-girlfriend that I was with for a long time, she had all the same ones, so I already found peace in it because I liked her.
Yeah.
And she had all these weird things.
But then when you see it like that in someone else.
What's weird is so often you can understand things intellectually, but then something happens where you actually understand it emotionally.
Yeah.
So you know that actress Olivia Munn.
Very well.
Yeah. And so I'm not out. She's talked about this in interviews. I bumped into her one time. She was happened to tell me about this thing where she pulls her eyebrows mm-hmm. out, right? And she's very open about that. And she goes, oh, yeah, it's just a form of OCD. And I go, oh, yeah, I had OCD. I had all these tics. And she goes, well, you know why you had OCD, right? And I go, no. And she goes, it's just about control.
Yeah.
You're controlling something because you're in a very chaotic environment.
Yes.
And when I did the math backwards, I was like, oh, yeah, that all started exactly when you married Greg. That all started like
fucking
the
Greg.
Second he came into our life.
It's always Greg.
It's usually a Greg.
Oh, yeah.
It's never a Gregory.
It's never a Gregory.
Gregory's a professor somewhere.
Yes, it's yeah. a Greg.
Greg's a, you're going to have OCD.
Hey, it's Greg.
But something like why I couldn't have figured that out, that like it started at a very specific time in life.
Yeah.
And then it took someone when I was 40 explain it to me. I'm like, oh, duh.
Well, this all kind of ties back to what we were talking about before, but about filling in the blanks is that, you know, your brain needs.
Yes, it needs to make sense of what happened.
It needs to make sense of information yes. and it needs to bridge gaps. And so that's why people.
Revisionist history.
And it doesn't matter what it is. But again, it's the Dunning-Kruger experiments where they again determined that the less people know, the more that they believe they know, and the more people know, the less they claim to know.
Uh-huh.
And so, and I think part of that is just in order to function in the world, people need so you'll see people arguing about stuff online, and you know 100% that they don't know what they're talking about,
sure.
but they will cling as fiercely mm-hmm. as anything. Like their life depends on it, and in some senses, maybe their emotional life does depend on it, but their brain is filling in the blanks. So they'll, you know, or I'm sure people will look at you and Kristen, or they'll watch your commercials or see your movies or anything, and they'll go, oh, I know they probably do X, Y, and Z.
Sure.
Because they need to.
Yeah,
that's how they need to make sense of why you're successful or who you are. Or
oh
what
yeah,
you're doing
yeah, yeah.
Or
yeah,
with based in not in any
having
reality,
never met us or chatted
with us whatsoever. Yet. And I think, you know, most people don't really want to understand the truth. They just need to.
They need it to confirm their understanding of.
They need to confirm
the world.
Their truth.
Absolutely, I do it too. We all do it.
Yeah,
but and then so the OCD thing. For years, I thought because in the Plague of Ticks, his ticks stopped when he started smoking cigarettes, and I went, "Oh my gosh, that's when mine stopped too." Maybe that's what broke it. But now I thought about it, and I was like. No, I got a car, and I actually, for the first time, was like, oh, I'm in charge of this life.
Right.
Like, at any point, I can just drive to wherever I need to go, and I can be on my own now. So I really now think it was I got that license, and I was like, nope, I'm my own human being now.
Can't tell me when to come home, Greg.
That's right, Greg.
This is my car, Greg.
Try to catch me if you can, Greg.
Thank you, Greg.
Greg was long out of the picture by then. I should have been over the OCD.
Oh,
long.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
it's
but
okay.
Sometimes you pick these things up.
But it is. It's, you know, it's like it's making connections to things and to try to get a semblance of, you know, oh, if I do this an X number of times, that will give me – it's very ritualistic. And I think when you go back and you look at
sort of the birth of religion, and you see, like, what are they doing? Well, they're repeating a series of rituals and steps over and over again to prevent bad things from happening and to try to usher in good things.
Yes.
It's human nature.
And the arc of that completely parallels how dangerous the environment they lived in was. So
sure.
I was an anthropology major, and if you look at the gods that people created in Mesopotamia, it flooded nonstop. You have the Judeo-Christian god who's going to make you choose between your two sons. You go to Egypt, same time, they're creating gods. They live on a fertile plain. It never floods. Crops are predictable. They have a super benevolent god that they don't have to make sacrifices to. And you can
and
just
cats.
Chart all these. Yeah, throw some cats in there.
They're
Why
way
not?
Ahead of us on that.
Yeah, they sure were.
The Egyptians really found founded the internet and what powers the internet.
Yeah, they saw that coming.
They really did.
Is that where cats are from?
Well, I feel like that's where they were worshipped.
Are you a cat guy? I could almost see you being one.
I was a dog person, but now I'm a cat person because my wife has a cat.
And you've fallen in love with the cat.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm.
Boy or girl cat?
He's a boy cat.
He's a boy cat?
He's a boy cat.
And what type of things does this cat do where you go, oh, I love that little guy?
Well, he ignores me, throws up on my feet.
right. Yeah.
I can't get him to, you know, Lydia went out of town last week. She was like, oh, you'll curl up with Anubis. Anubis, Egyptian god.
Okay, great.
dog god, but it's fine.
This feels set up now.
No.
Now I know I'm in the Matrix.
No, yeah.
I brought up Egyptian religion. You have a cat.
I wrote the script that way, okay? The script that
it's
way.
It's getting very suspicious.
I just want you to feel
comfortable. You underestimated my intelligence.
I'm trying to get your defenses down so that I can absorb your sweet matrix juice.
I come
juice.
Across as dumber than I am. It's
no,
not. You're
just,
not the first one to make the mistake.
I just want to turn you into me, and then I'll put the shades on, and then we'll go off.
This is all a ploy to sleep with my wife.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. I should have seen this coming.
Me and Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
It's the two of us.
Well, you think he already slept with her.
Did you tell Dax we're in the Matrix? Yeah, Bill. All right. Take it easy. Take it easy. It's all fine. But the cat, Lydia, went out of town, and she was like, curl up with Anubis when I'm gone. And I tried. You know, I got him into bed, held on to him for about a second. He leapt off and then slept. We have a little screened-in catio.
Okay.
And he slept outside because I think he was like, where's my...
Waiting for mom to get back. Does he wake you up at like 5 in the morning?
7.
Oh,
7 o'clock.
Well, then you're ready to have kids. He's great training.
Meow.
But yeah, those cats, they get in your face in the morning, right?
Yeah. He's just upset.
Just another great aspect of them.
He's just upset because of that.
Yeah,
that's what he's really upset about.
Who can blame him?
What other biography?
Especially the way you're fucking
I mean,
just so powerful. It's like watching a Pomeranian.
You know, it's just...
get up on that.
Cats are offended by doggy style. They're offended by it.
Yeah, absolutely.
They just don't think it's... Again, thank you very much.
I'm so glad my mother's here.
Yeah.
Again, Laura LeBeau, thanks for
joining
us.
Why don't we call it kitty style? Why don't we call it kitty style? The cats are like, what?
Yeah,
we do it that way, too.
I've seen lions fuck.
Yeah, come on.
I've never seen house cats fuck, but they all seem to be spayed or neutered or whatever.
I've never seen a house cat fuck a lion. This would be amazing.
Yet.
That house cat would high-five so many other house cats if it got to fuck a lion.
If they could get along.
If they could just...
I hear cat fights outside. Well, let me also say, I live in very close proximity to P22, the mountain lion that lives in Griffith Park.
Gotcha.
Do you know about this thing?
I've heard tell of it.
And it was in a neighbor of ours' crawl space, right? Do you know this? This is on the 60 Minutes episode they did on P22. And so they had a guy doing some work on the basement, and he came upstairs and he spoke very little English, and he's trying to explain to the homeowner that there is a lion in their basement. And the guy was like, there's no way there's a lion downstairs.
He just doesn't know the right word for it.
No,
it's a lion.
Yeah, I think he thought the guy was freaked out because there was a house cat. So he goes under the house. There, sure enough, P22's hanging out in there. They tried forever to get him out. He wouldn't come out. Then they decided to let him go. It's got a tracking collar. It finally left.
Sure.
Point being, I live in constant fear that P22 is going to, like, eat my children.
Sure.
So the other night, I am like, I am dead fucking set on the fact that P22 is fighting a coyote in my backyard. I'm hearing the worst noises you've ever heard, right? Just loud, crazy cat noises. I get my mag light out. I get in the backyard, two cats, just normal-sized cats fighting.
Oh.
But they make the grossest, loudest noises, such that I thought there was a cougar in my backyard.
Who were then eaten by a coyote and P22.
I don't think coyotes can catch cats, can they?
Sure they can.
Really?
Yeah, and they probably divided up the spoils and then formed a bond. So the coyote and the mountain lion.
Do you live by coyotes?
Yeah.
There is nothing like when they do kill something. I mean, it is...
We live next to the observatory.
Oh, then we live right by each other.
Oh, okay. Yeah. What? We must be. Yeah.
Then you live by me 22 too.
Oh
my god!
Yes. I have a new thing to be afraid of.
Yes, you need to really. Well, and you know what P22 did the other day? So sad, also kind of proud
name.
Of him.
This is how scientists name things.
Yeah. He got into the LA Zoo and he got himself a koala bear.
Oh.
Of all the animals,
as
he had
pet,
to kill
I mean,
the.
Oh no! I thought that.
Oh
was,
yeah! Oh. I'm sure the koala's riding on his back right now, up by the observatory.
Something tells me I'm just a montage of the koala and P22.
But he got a poor koala bear, and he had jumped over the koala bear's enclosure. The fence was like 13 feet high, and this thing jumped over, got himself a koala bear, and they have. You know, they have this like time delay security footage at the LA Zoo.
So he
and
eats
it's
the
just
koala
like,
bear.
You just see him dragging something pretty good size in his mouth, and then he disappears, and then they're missing a koala bear.
So he doesn't put on a pair of sunglasses and go, eucalyptus.
No. Then... Who's that? Chester the Cheeto?
Yeah,
that guy.
Yeah,
I
Chester
barely
the
got
Cheeto.
That one.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you have any Chester Cheeto figurines?
You're going to say, do you have any Chester Cheeto stories? Yeah, we used to hang out in the old days.
You had a really good Chester Cheeto story.
Boy, that
right?
guy. He liked to have fun.
He does. He's a party animal.
I'm curious.
He's literally a party animal.
I'm curious to know who else, what other biographies you read.
Oh, so I read Cornelius Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
Second, that's my second favorite one. He was awesome. You know, he like fist fought guys in the street and stuff. Do you know that about him?
So glad you said fought.
Fist fighted? Should I have said fist fighted?
I thought.
Oh, fisted.
My brain went.
He
to,
may have.
He fist fucked so many guys in the street.
Yeah. Well, it was 1800s, you know, Manhattan.
Vanderbilt!
Different world. Cornelius Vanderbilt. Carnegie. Lost total respect for him.
Yeah.
He was lazy as hell.
He was.
He was so lazy, and it was all insider trading. Truly, it was all insider trading. Boring. That's how he built that one. I read The House of Morgan, the J.P. Morgan story. Who else did I do? Oh, Teddy Roosevelt I did, because I did The Path Between Two Seas, the building of the Panama Canal, and Teddy Roosevelt was instrumental in that.
Did they all suffer from the same thing of, like, you know, the...
They're all so different. They're so different. The coolest of all of them, and I don't know why through history it's been kind of tainted, is Rockefeller. Is probably, if you had to say what American had the biggest impact on this country, period, it'd be him.
Yeah, I think
having
so.
Nothing to do with...
I think it's William Randolph Hearst.
No way. Not even close.
Of course.
So he had, at one time, he had 2% of the whole economy, right? He would loan the country money to bail them out. During the Civil War, he had to loan the government money. So he controlled 2% of the known wealth in America, right? He took all that money. Up till then, doctors, they were all graduating from all these schools. No standard of practice. There was no textbook. They were just declaring themselves doctors. So he said, John Hopkins, they seem to have real doctors. I will pay every university in this country. I will pay for all the costs if you adopt their methodology and their testing and everything. So he standardized what it means to be
boring. Hearst shot the last grizzly bear in California, and it's now on the flag. You're welcome.
He
would have been dead by now, Katie.
He cured hookworm. Hookworm. Do you know at that time Southerners had this terrible reputation of being lazy?
What?
And some doctor.
Where?
I mean, they still may have.
No.
That. Yeah. So some doctor said, you know what, guys? There's actually something medical going on. And at that time, over 30% of the Southerners had hookworm, and it makes you super lethargic. So John D. Rockefeller said, let's solve that. And by God, he solved that. You can just – the list is endless. He has solved so many – he started the very first medical research anything ever. There was no research. There was
Snore.
Only practice. Okay.
Hearst built a castle.
I would think for a hypochondriac, you'd be interested in all the medical advancements that Mr. Rockefeller
– Boring.
You don't like it.
Hearst numero uno.
Because he mirrors the Citizen Kane story or –
Because he was my wife's great-grandfather.
Was he really? Really? Is she involved in anything?
Yes.
Really?
Sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
William Randolph Hearst.
Yes.
So when you go to San Simeon.
Yep.
Yeah. San Simeon.
Yeah.
Okay. Like a Simeon.
We don't shorten it.
Okay. I just didn't know if it had an N at the end, but now I know.
Yeah. San Simeon. Oh, you thought it was San Simi.
San Simi. That sounds right.
We say it for sure. Yo, you going to San Simi?
Yeah.
You could just say San Simi.
Where you stay? San Simi?
San Simi.
So have you been up there with her?
Yeah.
And do you make her speak on the property like an expert? Did she go there as a child or anything?
Yeah.
He was long dead.
Yeah, we went. Yeah,
did she even meet him?
No. He died in 1948.
And she wasn't born yet?
She was born in 49.
49. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Great. Okay.
Yeah, she was born in 49.
Yeah, you probably aren't going to have kids. I mean, not to be sexist, but you might not have kids.
Well, I think if we want it bad enough, we'll do it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we can make it happen.
In this matrix of yours. Maybe you could.
These sperms.
But, I saw a really great biography. I didn't read it, but I did see a great biography on... No, I didn't. I'm getting him confused with John Paul Getty.
Hack!
Yeah.
I just like insulting
him. He was also an oil tycoon.
He was a...
Hearst was the LA Times, right? He was a publishing magazine.
San Francisco Chronicle.
And LA Times eventually.
Did he have LA Times too?
Yeah, I think he did.
He had a bunch of newspapers.
Yeah. And
what
happened to all that money? Did it all go away or did it
No.
It got put in a trust and it's all...
Well, they own
exists.
Hearst Media.
Okay. Which is still thriving?
Yeah.
Forgive me for not knowing how well Hearst Media is doing.
Listen, you know everything about the fucking Rockefellers and the Vanderbilt
so Hearst
street
Media,
fisting.
Have they, though, obviously newspapers have taken a dump over the last 20 years. So where are we at?
Well, I don't know what you're talking
about.
Can
I short this stock? Is it publicly traded?
I couldn't
traded?
Even walking in here. I had three paper boys with extras.
Sure. I got hit in the head with a couple of them, yeah, as I was on my way here.
So, obviously, you know.
Well, did they diversify? Are they online media and whatnot?
Well, there's a lot of things like, you know, all
Don't get defensive. I'm just
Shut up.
I just want to know what the Hearst family is doing now.
They have all the meat at
what
Whole Foods
have?
Is Hearst.
Is
meat?
It?
Yeah, they are ranchers.
Oh, really?
Cattle.
Oh, wow.
Media, newspapers.
So do you personally have access to anything cool that I don't because of this these marital ties of yours?
We went swimming in the pool at Hearst Castle.
You did? Yeah. And that's something that only you could do?
Well...
Does the family own it or is it now like a municipality?
The castle was donated to the state.
Okay.
Years and years and years, like 50 years ago,
as
40 years
expect,
ago. Or
who wants to maintain it?
Exactly. But they own all of the...
Surrounding area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How many acres are we talking?
Oh, I don't know.
Thousands.
Hundreds.
Hundreds of thousands.
Anywhere from 100 to like a lot.
A million.
Anywhere from 100 to infinity. I'm not 100% sure on how
they're second to Ted Turner, I think, for land ownership.
I'm going to say better than Ted Turner.
I don't think so.
They say
he owns property the size of
Who's
Texas.
They? Tell me who these people are. Who are they?
60 Minutes. Watched an amazing profile on Ted Turner. Did you see it?
This is charlatans.
Probably my favorite
Not in my
profile.
Matrix. Hashtag not my Matrix.
Hashtag not my Matrix. But yes, he owns a property the size of Texas. And he on his own property, Ted Turner, can drive from the border of Canada all the way to Mexico and never leave his own property.
Wow.
He's created all these wildlife corridors, right? So the buffalo and stuff can migrate.
And also the TNT network.
Let us not forget.
We know
and
drama.
Didn't he own the Braves at one point or maybe he still
Who knows?
Does.
That sounds like sports, but TBS.
That would talk about a vertically integrated everything. So it was all about the TBS and then the Braves played on TBS and they
who
were
Who
had
by the
him.
Horizontal integration and who had the vertical integration? Was it Carnegie? Did Carnegie have vertical integration? Or was he horizontal? Was it like was he the one that owned a piece of every part of the process?
Well,
it's like he owned the tracks.
So, well, do
and
you remember the,
trains?
The very? I didn't learn this in the book, but I remember as a kid learning this in civics or whatever class. Why trusts even started, and it was because of all the railroad expansion, right? The guys who owned the railroad also owned the company that built the nail, manufactured the nails. They also owned the company that made the rail itself, and
right.
they were overcharging themselves along the way.
Right.
And that is how Carnegie got all of his money, is that he would get a call from a buddy because he was high up in the in one of the railroads, and they'd say, hey, buy this stock. We're going to start a nail company. And he would buy it, and that was it. And then that thing would go up 10,000%. And then you take that money and they'd buy another thing. So he got super rich doing virtually nothing.
Well, there's
then he started
some work involved.
Eventually he made U.S. Steel, but all he did is get really good partners. He was retired at like 30 years old. He was just traveling the world.
I love that you still don't want to give him any credit. I mean, and then he built U.S.
No,
Steel.
No, guys, he was lazy. He was lazy. He was vain. Rockefeller hated him because they both were donating tons of their money, but Carnegie put his name on everything and Rockefeller never put his name on a thing. So, like, Chicago University is Rockefeller. That's his school. He paid for the whole thing.
I love that sitcom, 30 Karg.
30 Karg.
Yeah, 30 Karg is
pretty
a really
good.
Great.
They named that after him. Mm. He didn't name it 30 Rockefeller. That was named after
okay.
one of his children.
Got it.
He would have never done that.
Never.
Yeah, very pious man.
He was.
We've talked about a lot of things that are incendiary. Rockefeller's the number one. We will come to blows. We don't if have you to disparage Rockefeller.
I think we should fight about dead old rich men. If there's a reason to come to.
But if I can just say one thing, sure, I'm here to say go see Chips, but fuck that. If you only have X amount of time, read Titan. Don't go see Chips. Read Titan. It is the best biography. It's mind blowing.
But read Titan and then go see Chips, or start Titan, see Chips, and then finish Titan. Quick question. Why in the original Chips was Highway Patrol solving crimes?
Well, if that ruffled your feathers, you're going to hate the film because I go even further.
Maybe that's what they're supposed to do. I don't know. But it feels like they were going.
I'll tell you why.
Okay.
And I can't believe you need this explained to you. Because there couldn't be anything more fucking boring than watching for an hour people cite people for speeding. You can't have a show. That's not a procedural.
Well, listen.
Are you going to watch that show?
Yeah, I would watch that show in my Matrix. Yeah.
You know why? Yeah. Seatbelt tickets, blinkers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Low tire pressure.
A lot of get out of the car, sir.
That would float your sail.
Yes.
I don't buy it.
All right.
You need people rolling over on the grapevine, him discovering they're diabetic, get me a Snickers out of my saddlebag, John. This is a real episode.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you need to drive a show 6 years.
I guess you're... It was but only 6 years?
It was 6 years, yeah. I think 77, 83.
Oh, wow.
But in my version, it's even worse because Ponch is an FBI agent undercover as a CHP. Dude, he's got a real case he's working.
Oh, but then I feel like in the end, he's probably going to find more camaraderie with the California Highway Patrol.
Well, it's not that simple. He gets fired from the FBI. So,
gotcha.
Yeah, it's not like a after-school special life lesson where he's like, I could have more prestige and money, but I choose friendship.
So this is an intense drama, right? Chips is an intense drama.
Well, listen, it's not, but... I personally don't like parodies. It's not a parody. It does take itself serious for better or worse. I was trying to make Bad Boys or Lethal Weapon.
Sure.
So the bad guy is scary as fuck. It's Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
And the crimes they're committing are scary and, you know, dangerous.
And did you know Vincent D'Onofrio before this?
I did. How else would I get him in Chips?
I don't.
Come on, Chris. I did this movie, The Judge, a Robert Downey Jr. movie.
Yeah, I remember
a few
this
years
movie.
Ago. And D'Onofrio and I, from the second we met, were like soulmates. And we've hung out a ton since then. So I needed a very formidable bad guy in Chips. And I asked him, and he said yes. I exploited my friendship with him.
What if
him.
He showed up and he was like, hey, where are those chips you promised? You're like, no, it's California Highway Patrol. What?
Great, but where are the chips? Well, I think D'Onofrio was of the age, like, he really remembers Chips.
I totally remember Chips.
Yeah, and where did you grow up?
Mostly Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay, so not as bad, but I'm from Detroit, where it is gray 8 months of the year and freezing cold, and you'd turn that show on, and it was sunshine and California and palm trees and girls in bikinis and this odd couple on motorcycles.
You know what else is great about Chips? It wasn't fucking Greg.
Yeah, that's right. That is right. Greg was not on the
just
program.
Just wanted Ponch and John to roll up and be like, all right, Greg,
let's
get in the back
talk.
Of the fucking motorcycle.
Do you know this kid's pooping bare naked? Do you know he's taking toilet paper and touching the hallway wall for some
That's
reason?
That's on you, Greg.
And then he's doing it twice. It's not just enough that he's got to do it once, but he's doing it twice, Greg.
Book him, Ponch. Get him on
I feel like I told this story last time I was here, but clearly I didn't. But Greg is involved in this. So I had this crazy bathroom ritual, and I was so self-conscious about it. My ultimate fear was that someone would know what was going on in the bathroom, right? So we go to Cedar Point, this amusement park in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And after we're leaving there, before we drive back to Detroit, we stop at a Pizza Hut. I've been in an amusement park all day long. I've had corn dogs. I've had everything else. I got to go to the bathroom, and it's my worst nightmare because it's a public bathroom.
Sure.
So I go into the Pizza Hut bathroom. I've got to get bare naked. I got to find a place to put my clothes that won't get dirty because
of
the floor.
Your mom is laughing at you. Your mother is laughing at you.
She had no idea the agony that was going on in the bathroom, right? And so
I think she does, but it's still funny.
As you would expect, I'm in there a while.
Sure.
Because I got a lot of work to do before I can.
A lot of prep and a lot of post-op.
Yes. So all of a sudden, I'm in there. I'm like finally concentrating. You better not be doing what I think you're doing in there. And it was Greg. and he was outside the stall, and I'm bare naked, like perched on the seat, and I'm like, oh my God, can he see me through
what
the crack?
What did he think you were doing?
Well, now that I'm older, I think he was accusing me of jerking off or something.
So he thought, wow, I spent the whole day in an amusement park.
I'm going to go.
I got a boner.
I saw a lot of girls in tank tops, which, by the way, those amusement parks were,
sure,
as a young man,
also not
thrilling.
Your fault. If you're doing loop-de-loops on a roller coaster, it's throwing a lot of blood into
you're in survival
areas.
Mode.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
A lot of guys in Vietnam had erections when they were killing people.
Greg understands all of these things.
He does. He was very in tune with the... Yes. So, suffice
to say...
You
got to rub out a deep dish.
I was like... I don't know that I've ever been more mortified than when he said, are you doing what I think you're doing? But which I now, again, I think he was kind of accusing me of masturbating. He couldn't have imagined I was bare naked in there.
I'm dying.
Okay, good. I just figured out how to... I'm Neo. I just figured out how to kill the Matrix architect.
You make the Matrix laugh with a jerk-off story about Greg yelling at you?
In a Pizza Hut bathroom, no less, post-amusement park.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So...
What a memory.
Now,
what
did you feel like you had
memory.
To start jerking off? Just because if you're like, well, I'm going to get in trouble, I might as well at least...
This is the second... This is one of two stories where I do believe later when I replayed the thing in my head that people did think I was masturbating. The other time was I mispronounced in sixth grade. They made you read aloud and I misread... organism in science class. I read orgasm, mm-hmm, and everyone laughed. And then I was with my dad that weekend. I wasn't going to ask my mom. I asked my dad. I go, hey, what does orgasm mean? And my dad goes, you ever play with yourself? And in my head, I was like, oh, it means masturbate.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, oh, okay. But now I realize me saying, oh, okay, sounded like I was saying, yes, I masturbate. Mm-hmm. And now I know what an orgasm is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, it seemed like I admitted to
so
that.
So you were cranking it in the Pizza Hut.
I wasn't.
Bathroom.
I was okay. About 4 months away from cranking it when I asked my father what an orgasm was.
His timeline was off. Greg's timeline was
off.
No,
Greg, mind you, I was much younger. I was like second grade for the Pizza
Hut
story.
Gotcha. Oh.
In his weird world, maybe.
What an animal.
Maybe
he just thought pooping was dirty. Maybe he was just like, you're never supposed to poop.
Could have been that, but knowing him, I doubt that was the...
What did you say? What do you say?
I was like, oh, 2 minutes.
Boy, this...
like on the verge of tears.
This stripping down thing is so funny.
How long did you do it?
I mean, you know, honestly, if I'm home alone, there are still some times...
Well, especially if you are sick. Like, yeah. If you have, say, food poisoning or the flu, there are moments where you're like, oh, I just need all this off me. Yeah. Right? Like if you're very uncomfortable.
I found out after my dad passed away, I found out the same thing. My stepmother told me that because I made some sort of a... Oh, she saw my stand-up and I was talking about obsession and like weird things I had. And she goes... and about how I had like a phobia of if I'm in a public restroom, if anyone comes in, I just freeze up like a timid mammal.
Right.
And like a small rodent, uh-huh, who feels like he's being... like there's a hawk overhead.
Yeah.
And she laughed and she said, oh, your dad was the same way. He used to have to teach. She goes, he used to have to take off, lock the doors, lock the bedroom door, lock the bathroom door, take off all his clothes. And I was like, oh my God.
You come by it honestly.
Yeah, it's genetic.
I don't think I got it from my father.
You probably got it from my dad.
I probably got it from your dad. Yes, yes. I think Laura, who's here, probably swung through Minnesota at some point.
And
met
who
your
knows?
Dad.
Yeah. Which was weird because we lived in Memphis, but maybe...
Oh, yeah, yeah,
Minnesota.
Memphis, sorry.
You know, he was up in Minnesota.
It was an M.
Yeah, he was up there.
Memphis, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have any accent. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I do like it, though, quite a bit.
Memphis?
Yeah.
It's
well,
nice.
I like Tennessee in general. I was just
Tennessee's
in Nashville.
Very nice. Nashville's very
but
nice.
Memphis has gotten super duper cute, and like the downtown's really cute now.
Yes.
It's good, really good
used
food.
It's scary to go down there. Now it's only kind of scary to go down there.
All these towns are getting really, really good now.
Listen, if they can put a Starbucks in there and an Applebee's, everything's A-okay.
But not to be a snob, it used to be when you left L.A., you're going to be hard-pressed to get some fresh vegetables for a long time.
Yeah.
But now, like my wife did a movie in Atlanta, they've got this whole area downtown that's like farm-to-table. Then I go to Nashville, they got a whole farm-to-table thing. Detroit even now has all that stuff. So,
yeah,
it's great.
And a RoboCop.
Yeah, Chips. March 24th. Check it out. If you like Farm to Table and you love biographies about the patrician class, you're going to love Chips.
I love appealing to the organic market with the movie Chips.
Yeah.
Chips is Farm to Table.
No hydrogenated oils involved.
No. There were no steroids were used.
Do you eat well? Is this something you do
now? I eat somewhat well. Yeah. Not amazing, but not terrible.
Because as I've found out, so you and I both had previous addiction issues, which is basically the house is on fire.
Yeah.
And then you get the house out. It's no longer engulfed in flames. And you realize, like, there's a pretty bad leak in the bathroom, too, right, that I never noticed. And it's almost terrible. Like, the better you get, the more you're now fine-tuning, right? You're
sure.
Like, well, shit, if I'm not going to die of a liver problem, I might as well not die of, you know, something else now.
As long as you can prevent yourself from setting your own house on fire to have to put out the fire again.
Then you're doing something right. But yeah. I do find, like, it just doesn't end. So now I eat pretty well.
Yeah.
And that's exhausting.
It is exhausting. It takes more work to feel okay.
It
takes more work to feel okay.
And it doesn't seem fair.
Now, are you worried that, like, what steps are you taking to try to ensure that your kids don't get the...
Aren't addicts?
Well, not just that, but just the sort of, like, the obsessive qualities. Like, what do you...
Well, I do think they'll be able to avoid being OCD because the house is pretty darn stable, or it is currently. Something could obviously happen to change that. But currently, I'd say they're going to escape without OCD. But
cool.
If they're addicts, they're addicts, right? I mean, there's nothing I can really do about that.
I mean,
I know plenty of recovering addicts that had perfect childhoods.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess. I mean, I don't know. Who knows?
You've never met any? You don't believe them?
Naughty by nurture. I have no idea. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, my parents were very cool. Like, I wasn't, but... You know, we moved a lot when I was a kid. I don't know if that had something to do with it.
Did your dad have a drinking problem?
I think he certainly did when he was younger, and he certainly continued to drink until he died, but not in his later years. It was more just the casual evening drink.
Like,
you know,
a highball?
Like beers. It was beer. It was
Cleaver. Mr.
It was
Cleaver.
He was like Mr. Cleaver, but with Bud Light, I think. Or,
okay, sure.
You know, whatever.
Or Bud Ice.
Bud Ice. I don't know what the ice part is supposed to be.
Yeah. But, well, my dad was an addict, and then all my uncles on my grandmother's side are all were terrible addicts. So,
and then
I come by it honestly.
Greg was a Greg.
Greg was, you know, I don't want to speak for him, but I think there was some addiction going on, you know. I hope.
So what are you doing? You don't. There's nothing you can really do.
What can you do? What could you possibly do?
I don't know.
You can't do anything.
I don't know.
They're going to eventually drink in high school or junior high, whatever.
Right.
And they're either – it's going to go, oh, this is what I've been missing my whole life.
Right.
They either have that feeling or not.
Right.
If you have it, you have that beer, and then you're like, oh my God, this is the feeling I've been wanting my whole life.
But I don't know, though. For me, I feel like it was so gradual because I never drank in high school.
Right.
It was college. But
when you drank, did you feel like, this is right?
I just felt like, oh, this is nice and fun. Like, it kind of morphed from the this is fun to I seem to be doing this a lot.
Sure, sure.
For a variety
of
reasons.
Friends and loved ones now.
What's their problem?
Well, yeah, I'm not saying that right out of the gates I was like, I want to do this 7 days a week. It's just like, oh, this feeling is a feeling I deeply desire.
Sure.
I wasn't ambivalent about it whatsoever.
Gotcha.
I was like, this is a love affair here.
Gotcha. Well, it's a good thing that you figured that out.
Yeah.
And that you've turned your life around.
Uh-huh.
And you have a nice wife and nice kids. And you're,
well, you've not met them.
No, but I'm just going to
assume.
In my matrix, they're very nice.
Okay, great. Yeah.
I mean, when
they
you
are,
leave here,
they
I'll
are
disappear.
Quite lovely. I'm very excited for you to have them. It truly does cure every existential problem
you
might
have. Your kids. I will have my own kids.
No, you should have them.
To give
no,
me your
I don't
that
want
was
to
very
mine.
Strange.
No, I want you to have kids.
Do you think your wife would appreciate knowing that you're trying to give your kids away to other people?
Probably more so than me.
Crazy.
She offers them to a lot of folks.
Do people ask you questions about how to fix their appliances?
I have received a couple of tweets complaining about different fit and finish issues that they probably sustained during delivery.
Sure.
Because it's a beautiful product. Can't speak high enough about the build quality.
The whole line of smart appliances.
My response to them was, if you got a flat tire, would you tweet Matthew McConaughey and ask him to change your flat tire on your Lincoln?
And McConaughey would. He would be there to fix that
the
tire.
The fuck he would. A, he wouldn't know how to change it. B, you see the commercials. This
what are you
guy's
talking
always
about?
Going to some event in a suit.
No, I just, he's driving around helping people fix their.
I cannot do an impression of Matthew McConaughey, so this is it.
He's yeah, just driving around helping people fix their flat tires. Hey there.
A lot cooler if you did.
Hey, it's real nice.
I heard you got a flat tire.
Hey there, Foxy Lady 729.
There it is. You
got
to get a little
You got to get it. I can't get down
gotta,
there that low. Oh, you got the lisp in there, too. I'm kind of, I'll just stick up here with Clinton.
Heard you got a flat tire.
Hey.
Here's what I do.
Hey,
I just drive it on a flat. See where it takes me.
Did you know you could do this impression?
No.
This is great.
Thank you.
Do you see... Did you know you didn't know when you were coming in here to do a podcast and you were going to leave the preeminent Matthew McConaughey impersonator?
What if the whole way here I was practicing my mom, Matthew McConaughey, and I slow played you? I waited an hour to bring up the and even I tricked you into bringing it up because you wanted to know about the Samsung issue, which turned dovetailed into my McConaughey
really nicely, almost too well.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of it's
heard you got a flat tire. Here's what I always do. I put on a suit, and I fall backwards in my swimming pool, and sometimes I look at that flat tire, and it's full.
See, you need to take that home, and you need to
take it on the road.
You need to take it on the road.
Do you do any impersonations?
I don't, I mean, not.
That's a no, yeah.
I mean, it really depends on.
What's the bar? What's the bar?
Your definition of sounding like another person.
Uh-huh. That
exactly.
Would be, yeah.
Well. Then no.
Not exactly, but.
But. I can do, I feel like I can do like Dana Carvey characterizations of voices
Mm-hmm.
that are sort of like not spot on, but
right.
A caricature of that voice
yes.
That conveys the idea of who that person is.
Now, my wife can imitate absolutely any human being, male or female. She has that mimic skill. She can't do it on demand, but anytime she's working with somebody, she can like she can do Drew Barrymore. Like you think you're talking to Drew Barrymore. She does Vince Vaughn perfect.
Oh, wow.
I wouldn't have even known what to pick up on, but she can do Vince Vaughn just perfect.
And was she
I told you she's more talented than me, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think we covered that the last
time.
Yeah,
I think
here.
That's known. That's probably known.
It's out there. Yeah. It's out there in the
Although
world.
Although she didn't direct Chips March 24th, so...
Take that. Take that.
She can't do everything.
I mean,
maybe she can.
Could she direct the movie as Vince Vaughn?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I wonder if she could keep that ruse up and how long she could keep it going if like she called in to people and made everyone think she was Vince Vaughn and then just made everyone think like, oh, you just missed him.
Make no mistake. She's still a female doing the impersonation. So I don't think she could call into like K-Rock and convince them Vince Vaughn was on the phone. But
I feel like a challenge has been laid down.
If you were listening to her do Vince Vaughn, your head would be spinning about how good it is.
I think she absolutely needs to call into Kevin and Bean and say she's Vince Vaughn.
But the interesting thing about doing impersonations or characters is... It does make you think like the person you're imitating. It's a very weird thing. Can you relate to that?
Yeah.
Like it's this. Like in the ground.
I'm Dax Shepard.
There you go.
And I'm directing a movie.
There you go. Yeah.
I have kids and Greg.
This was when Dax Shepard was on Fraggle Rock.
All these doozers keep eating all my work. I build it and they eat it.
But you remember, like,
God damn it.
At the Groundlings, you do these characters, and then they you start saying stuff that I couldn't say on my own. I can't explain.
Yeah, like, I know what you mean.
I start when I talk like Owen Wilson. I do start using words he would use that I wouldn't normally use on my own.
Like, hey, man.
Yeah, you know, he's like, I always say the same sentence to get into him. He's like, Paul's an asshole like Mom got such a great kitchen. He's like, I don't know. I was just kind of thinking about this. And then, you know, he's just got this way of like kind of taking a little time in between his next words.
Watching the mouth is really
is that
so much a part of the impression. It's yeah. So unfortunate that people listening to the podcast can't see the.
Well, you just kind of want to imagine that my lips are kind of like really puckered up.
But the gumminess of the mouth.
He uses words like counterintuitive, you know? It's kind of counterintuitive.
But it's almost like you're and I don't mean this as an insult to Owen Wilson.
It's an anus.
It's, yes, yeah, you're making a puckering butthole.
Yeah, sure.
To do like Owen Wilson, you just have to pucker your lips a little bit.
That's kind of what you got to do, though, that you're not really doing so well, is get your lips like this. And then once you do that, all of a sudden you start talking through your
nose. Oh, your mouth is pooping. Your mouth is pooping.
It's real counterintuitive.
I used to be able to do Luke. I did a movie with Luke, and I used to be able to do him really good, but I lost that skill. Yeah. Just another one out the window.
Man, that's the worst problem I've ever heard.
Yeah.
We got to get that back for
it's
you.
It's a real problem.
Are you okay?
I just can't bring myself to watch a YouTube clip of them and get it back.
How would you even do that, to be honest? It's the technology just isn't there yet.
It's not there.
We don't have the connection speeds. We don't have the devices.
No.
It's someday I hope you run into him again.
I can only hope.
And kidnap
him. It's been a long time since I ran into
him. You need to kidnap him. You need to get McConaughey, run him over, throw him in the trunk of a Lincoln who was shot by Booth. Jumping onto a stage, and he broke his leg.
President was named after the car.
That's
just
right.
To be clear, if you learned anything today,
you need to say when you throw him into the trunk, you're going to say, "Hey, man, explode the head,"
and explode
then,
your head,
and then slam the trunk close, and he'll get it.
He'll get it eventually.
He'll get it.
Yeah,
those Wilson brothers—they know what's up.
They do. They're smart.
Chips is out Friday.
Friday,
wow.
March 24th.
Are you? Is it? Can you? Was it a hard? The process of directing.
Mm-hmm.
And being in is not too daunting?
It's not. I will say this. Normally when you do a movie, a writer wrote it. So that's like one point of view mm-hmm. on life. Then a director takes that script and then he has to execute it. So then it goes through his point of view filter. And then in a scene with two actors, they have two points of view, right? So by the time you get down to doing it, you're basically looking at the compromise of four points of view.
Sure.
Where I'm three of those four.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually is way easier than, say, when I'm in a scene in Parenthood because I can't help but look through it from my point of view, right?
Sure.
So I find it easier. It's easier to act in something I'm directing for sure.
Oh, wow. I would feel the opposite. I would feel like, just tell me what to do. Tell me what you need me to do and I'll do it.
Yeah. Well, weirdly, you and I have worked together under that circumstance. We did that weird red nose thing.
Oh, yeah. That was fun.
Yeah.
That turned out really great.
But I'm the type of actor, and this is not across the board because I was on a TV show with 14 cast members. We all liked different directors. Like, I don't think there's any, you know, universal way to approach actors. But personally, I respond well to confidence building. I don't like, let me come out of the gates with four things you did wrong in that take. I'd rather hear, like, you're crushing this. Let's see if we can make this better. I need, like, to me, acting's a confidence game. So because no one's going to come in and tell me how shitty I did after the take, I mean, I'm doing that upstairs mentally,
yeah.
But I would be doing that as an actor anyways. It just makes me less self-conscious.
So if I'm directing you and I go to your dressing room and I knock on the door and go, you better not be doing what I think you're doing in there.
I'm dead.
Okay, so that's not going to help you?
You're going to get the worst performance of me possible.
At this point, you might be masturbating, though.
It would trigger me. It would. I might be. You're right. Yeah, I actually might be. I might say, come in. That's what you get.
Good aim. I got to give you that one.
Time.
You're right. You got my mouth open on that one.
See you on set.
Okay. All right. That's lunch, everyone. Except for me. I'm full.
Do you direct stuff?
Do I direct stuff? No, I don't direct anything. I don't
you
direct
don't?
Anything. No.
Oh, okay.
No, I just don't think I'd be good at it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel that's, like there are other people who are more, much more skilled, and it's much more in their DNA.
I just thought for a control freak, maybe it'd appeal to you. Because to me, it's very satisfying.
No, I kind of, you know, I know the things that I'm, that speak to me that I'm good at, and directing is just, it's just never been a thing where I felt like, I feel like I need to do that.
Right.
Just never been a thing that I felt like I needed to try to do. And I don't think I would do a good job.
Yeah, okay. Then you should not do it then.
No.
No, you should skip that.
I'll probably skip it.
Yeah.
Unless, who knows, maybe I'll get all cocky at some point and be like, I could do this. Oh, wait, this is really hard.
Yeah.
Well, because I feel like the process is, you know, each movie, you learn a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. So it's not just.
Well, like writing you or stand-up, you learn by fucking up.
Yeah.
It's literally the only way to learn is to paint yourself in a corner in the editing room and go, okay, note to self, don't ever, ever do this again because there's no solution to this.
And I don't know if I have the energy right now to start up a whole new skill set and a whole new process of discovery.
I think because when I started at the Growlings, there wasn't YouTube. So to be in the Growlings, you had to
Grandpa.
Write.
Grandpa.
What's that?
Grandpa over here.
His old granddad.
Yeah. Oh, I do drone on.
There wasn't YouTube. So the only place you could see a filmed sketch was like at the Groundlings on the TV that played mm-hmm. in between sketches, right? So I started the Groundlings. I've never acted. I've never written sketches, and I've never directed anything. But to get on stage, you have to write a ton. So you're learning to write as much as you're learning to act. And then I really liked making digital shorts. So that was something I was doing right from the very beginning. Like I learned all three of those things at the exact same time.
Well,
so I knew that. You know what I'm saying? That was something that,
right.
To me, those things are all together.
It was a trial by fire.
Yeah, and they've been linked together since I very first started trying to do comedy. It was like, oh, you make shorts, they play at the theater between sketches, then you do a sketch, then you write a bunch.
Well, that's a good story for anyone who's like, well, I'm kind of interested in doing creative stuff, but I don't know what to do. So just go take a class. Like, go take a class somewhere.
Yes.
Like at Groundlings or...
I had the singular goal of being on Saturday Night Live. I clearly was not on Saturday Night Live, never even hosted, and yet I now do this other thing. Chips, March 24th. That's the thing I did.
Kristen's hosted, hasn't she?
Nope.
Really?
No.
That's very surprising.
It's crazy, right? Especially with what I just told you about her mimic abilities.
And she never auditioned for the show?
No. Well, she was never pursuing like a comedy career per se.
We must have talked the last time you were on. You must have auditioned for SNL.
I never did.
You didn't?
Nope. I was in the Sunday Company, and I auditioned for Punk'd, which they were calling in every single person who did improv in the city. I didn't have an agent, and I went and I got that show, and then that show aired, and then 3 months later I was in Without a Paddle. So then I got to immediately do movies,
mm-hmm.
and then I was loving that. So my total aim shifted, you know? I mean, I still have this... I always wished I had been on Saturday Night Live, of course, but the thing I ended up doing was very wonderful, and I didn't.
And much more fulfilling than the thing that you...
Probably now. The fact that I get to write and direct movies, yeah, is, I think, probably ultimately was more satisfying than had I been on the show. I guess, I don't know.
I feel like it's a no-brainer at some point. One of you is going to host SNL. If she hosts first, are you going to be happy? You're going to be like, aww.
Well, so my only scrapes with it were they called to ask if I could do it in 2006 when I was shooting a movie, and the movie would not let me out to do it, which was a heartbreaker. They called this year and asked Kristen her availability for March to host. So there was a moment this year where I did think she was going to host.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm genuinely not jealous of anything she does. Like, I'm truly just very happy for her, and my best friend keeps doing wonderful things, and that's great. But that one I was a little bit like, okay, so she's definitely going to host it before I'm going to host it. That was my express dream for the last 30 years. It'd be like if I had gotten to play a Disney princess in a cartoon before her.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, now you have a new goal, which is to try
be
to be a Disney princess.
Just to fuck her. But it's too late. She's already the biggest Disney princess of all time, so I probably won't top
it. I think you could go bigger, bro. I think you could be a bigger princess, bro. I think you could do it.
Yeah, they have to have a transgender princess at some point,
I
right?
think it's very possible.
We got to be right around the corner from that.
I think it's very...
I can't sing.
It's time.
I'm a bad voiceover actor.
No singing?
No. Terrible singer. Love to sing, though. Sing probably more than anyone else in the house.
Just sing it.
Let it go! Let it go!
Isn't that Let It Go?
Ooh, that's
from the movie your wife
song.
Was in.
Yeah, yeah, Let It Go.
Boy, does do your kids understand that that's their mom?
They do, and they could care less. They they actually do love the music, but Kristen once sang to raise money for something, and all these people in L.A. bought tickets for their kids to see her sing those songs with Adina. They had never done it before. Sold out in a second. I bring my daughter there. Kristen's singing for maybe 15 seconds, and Lincoln goes, "Daddy, there's popcorn in the lobby. Can we go get popcorn?" And I was like, "You don't want to see mom sing?" She's like, "No, I want popcorn." The only kid there that didn't watch.
Well, she sees mom every day.
She could care less. I think it's healthy. It would be very weird.
Though she's going to care when you host SNL, though.
No, oh, absolutely.
She's going to be there past her bedtime.
She does think the stunts I do are cool.
Which particular stunts?
Like in Chips, I do a ton of stunts. And so she would come to set and she'd watch me like drift a car through an intersection, and she would see that and she thought that was really cool that dad could do that.
That's cooler than mom being a princess, she thought?
Yeah, I think she does think that.
Wow.
Yeah. I think she's a miniature gearhead. I think I'm getting my dream. We'll see.
So did you hold that over your wife's head, or did you not mention that?
No.
Is that just between you and...
I think my wife was happy for me.
Aw, that...
Yeah. She gets SNL. I get to impress.
You get to drift a car with the kids.
Yeah, 3.5-year-old.
You guys are fucking sweet. God damn it.
What line of work is your wife in?
She
is an heir to the
well, but she's she was she did modeling for like 10 years.
So she's terrible looking.
And she's she was a toe model.
Oh, okay. No, okay.
She did modeling for like 10 years and then she you know, she started working as an actor, and that's what she really is into now. And okay. She loves horror. So she wants to do horror movies.
Oh, that's great.
So, so she's been, like, doing all this crazy machete training. And
really?
She has a guy that comes over, and they, like, train with a bow staff and machetes. Like, ting, 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 ting. Like, I hear, like, clinging in the driveway, and she's out there. Ting, 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 ting. Like, all these machetes clanging off each other.
And do you have, like, a tourniquet ready at all time? She's likely to come in the house missing an arm at some
I feel
point,
like
right?
But she, I don't think she would I think it would she I would she would
she'd
accidentally
like
turn and like lop my arm off, not hers.
Okay.
I feel like she's
and what's this dude like who comes over and teaches her machete work? I guess you don't want to say because he's a real person.
He's a real person
and you're gonna bump
with
into
real
him.
Feelings
to
and
me,
he knows
he's
how
not
to
a real
wield
person.
A machete.
He's a guy.
He's real. He's very real.
No, he's clearly real in that sense, but to me he's a guy who teaches machete work.
Yeah.
So and I don't see him personally, so
no.
I'm probably more apt to,
yeah.
You know.
He's a very nice man.
Okay, how old is he?
He's probably around our age.
Okay,
yeah.
58.
He's 58 years old.
Okay, and does he wear like a particular outfit, or is it a normal street clothes?
He likes to cosplay as John Goodman's character from Roseanne. So it's a lot of flannel.
Uh-huh, and those work
and
boots.
A lot of butt crack.
Work
yeah,
boots.
And a lot of like pulling up.
He's
his
not
pants
wearing like a gi or anything. Over,
no,
he?
No. Okay. It's weird. He cosplays as Dan from Roseanne.
Okay.
He calls
okay.
himself Danimal.
Okay.
And, you know,
I don't
so want to
get you in
thing.
Hot water with the
no, him. No. Listen, Danimal and I have an understanding.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's totally
he spends
fine.
A lot of time with your wife.
Spends a lot of time with her, you know, just talking about what the other characters whose name I can't remember and the kids are up to.
Sure.
Yeah, and how the daughter looks different now from when the show first started. And you know, just all the things
the
that
staples.
People talk about with those situations. Yes, but I am terrified. My wife is a weapon-wielding human being.
And is it an erotic thing for her?
I don't know if it's neurotic, but she...
No, erotic. Like, does she feel...
You can't spell neurotic without...
Erotic.
Hey, come on.
After these sessions where she's wielding this sword, do you find that she's more frisky? I guess that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're still in the first year of marriage, so I feel like everything is still...
awesome. Tell me about
is
that.
Is still a frisky or a fancy feast.
Okay.
Either way.
Okay.
And, it's... Okay. We're still in that phase.
So when it goes down to once
taking
a
out
week,
the garbage,
have me back.
Hard as a rock.
Back. Okay, great.
Yeah.
All right, well, when it slows down, maybe these questions will be more, you know.
You mean?
They'll be more poignant.
It'll never
when
slow
things
down.
Slow, oh, yeah, you're right, yeah.
It never,
yeah. You'll be the one
about?
That doesn't slow down.
We've
right.
said
yeah.
to each other.
Then you're good.
That
you're,
it will last.
Good. Yeah,
that it,
you're good.
The passion never goes away.
That's right.
All you got to do is just want it.
Yeah.
And to stay there forever.
I'm sure when
fine.
Her dopamine levels playing off, things will
she's
still be as hot
on
and heavy.
The dopamine
yeah,
levels.
Yeah,
like, she's...
It'll
promise
great.
That the dopamine levels will never go down. Maybe go up, and I think
under certain
yeah.
situation. Yeah,
yeah. It's
you're
just
good.
It's only going to get hotter as far yeah. as I'm.
Well, you know what? You know it's really a barn burner for their libido is some kids.
They. Yes.
I bet it's just going to get turbocharged.
It's a big turn on.
After
it's a
that,
big turn on to wake up all yeah. night.
You're probably going to have to take an over the counter testosterone supplement just
probably.
To keep up. Yeah, you might want to start shopping now.
I think my penis is going to be like a Viagra Pez dispenser.
Yeah.
It's just gonna, again, I'm
especially,
sorry that your mom
again,
is,
just want to welcome.
That.
She came just in as a super fan. I think she's
and
leaving
she's
as
leaving
a fan.
As just a fan.
Which is good. I think we right-sized her. We right-sized her. Her fandom.
Part of this was really just to take it down a notch.
Yeah, I brought her here mostly yeah. just... you know.
I really like that Chris Adler guy. Yeah, we'll see about this.
Yeah, I was like, Mom, there's no deities. There's no, you know, you shouldn't have reverie for other
humans. Here's your real God now. but it's been lovely to me. Really nice to meet you. Very nice to meet both of you. And thank you for
and
coming in. And congratulations.
Thank you. I love sitting with you. And
anytime.
I'll do it again.
Anytime you want. Apparently we're neighbors.
It only takes 2.5 years to direct these things, so I'll see you in
2019.
And a half. Yeah.
Or you could come over to the house sometime.
I'd love to. It sounds like we're close.
We're very close.
We can both see the observatory. That's a good sign.
I have an arcade in the house. If you like.
Least shocking detail about your personal life just came out. That'd be like me saying, hey, I got a four-car garage.
What?
Yeah, no shit you do.
Talking about the BMX, pinball, multicades.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could come there and relive some shit.
You could relive some shit. You could ride your bike over.
We got to get Randy Hammond over.
Ride your bike over.
I'll ride my bike over with my Air Jordans.
Yeah, and come play games.
But you're wearing right now.
We will never die. We will never grow old. Passion lives forever. We are eternal. All right. Well, explode your head.
All right. Explode your head, too.
All right. Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
That was...
Yes, I say that at the end of At Midnight. Thank you very much. That was the correct way to end the podcast. I apologize.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Welcome to the end of the Nerdist podcast. This was brought to you by. We should start saying that at the end. Welcome to the end of the Nerdist podcast. Yeah, why not welcome people to the end?
What if people are listening and they think, "Oh my god, it just skipped to the next episode"?
What's happening? No, this is the end of the episode you just listened to, Dax Shepard. And this episode was brought to you by Wilson, starring Woody Harrelson, based on the graphic novel by Daniel Clowes of Ghost World fame, and from the director of The Skeleton Twins. The film follows a lonely, hilariously honest middle-aged misanthrope named Wilson who reunites with his estranged wife, played by Laura Dern, and gets a shot at happiness when he learns he has a teenage daughter he has never met. Check out Wilson in theaters Friday, March 24th.
And while you're at it, buy the graphic novel. It's great.
Yeah, do the graphic novel. See it first or afterwards.
Oh, compare and contrast. You know, I saw High Fidelity before I read it.
And?
They're both favorites of things. Like, the book is so good and the movie's so good.
And you got Nick Hornby to sign your
first edition of it.
Nice.
Guys, welcome to the actual end of the podcast.
This is the end of the podcast.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies and brands to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.